Good afternoon, Steeler Nation. This is Rudy Rude Dog Reyes on the RudeDogShow.com. This afternoon, you may recognize this gentleman from many game-winning field goals. Yes, I said field goals. You may notice him from being in a black and gold uniform. Welcome, Mr. Jeff Reed. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
How you doing, man? I'm good.
Glad to have you on the show. Glad to hear you're doing good. Lots of cool stuff going on in the Steelers offseason. You were definitely a part of that Steeler core for quite some time. And behind Gary Anderson, you're second in scoring by most points scored by a Steeler. In fact, be it of all stats, you definitely hold that marker. You've also played for the 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. To go a little backwards here, we're going to do a little spin towards your university days at Chapel Hill, North Carolina. You majored in journalism. You played college football there, but you didn't have a lot of success initially prior to your 2000 season. Tell me about that first game where you actually kicked a ball in an actual game to make you one of the most consistent kickers in North Carolina history.
Well, my story is kind of crazy. I'll just briefly bring it up to the point you're talking about. And, you know, I went from soccer player since I was 5 years old all the way to I was a, you know, I loved football. I was a diehard Kansas City Chiefs fan. Only because I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and there wasn't a pro team where I was from until the Panthers came around. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I love the game of football, but I think I'm too much of a you-know-what to play the game. And finally, my senior year in high school grew the kahunas to play the game. And I saw limited success. I knew I was strong because I had the strongest leg on the soccer field. I knew I could kick because I got a little bit of instruction, but, you know, I ended up doing well in high school, and then walking on to Chapel Hill, basically for the scholarship. I mean, not for the scholarship, for the education. So, bringing it up to the point where that you asked me the question about the first game I actually kicked in, it was my actual senior year, which would be my redshirt junior year, and I didn't start. So another kicker that was a walk on, he got the starting position, whether it was political or whether he earned it. That's for them to determine. He wasn't kicking so well, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know, maybe he's not so good under pressure. Let's just give Jeff a try. Mm-hmm. I went in against Wake Forest and went, I think, 4-for-4, 3-for-3. I did very well, and I actually kind of surprised myself. I knew I was good, but until you're thrown into the fire, you really don't know how good you can be. And so from that day on, I played the rest of the games, and the following season, they gave me a scholarship, which was, most importantly, saved my parents the money. So the first kick ever was very, very nerve-wracking, but I felt I had nothing to lose because the other kick was like 1-for-4, missed a couple extra points, and I was like, oh, I can do this. And then all of a sudden, you know, I went out there and boomed one from 30-something yards, and it was just kind of, it was one of those things where you just knew you're in the right spot.
You know, coming from an East Mecklenburg High School in Charlotte, North Carolina, you kind of transitioned over into being a kicker. You were playing soccer. You lettermen in both sports. Unfortunately, the team went to the finals but lost 2-1. In that senior year, that 54-yard field goal definitely counts for their own personal record as well as yours against that Provident High School. You had set a new record. You were all-conference, all-county honors, one of the best kickers in the country. Once you got to Chapel Hill, what were your thoughts about winning that Lou Groza Award? I mean, it's given to those scholars as well as field goal kicker. I mean, you actually had done both. So how were you able to manage not only your scholastic endeavors as well as your football endeavors to balance that out to win that award?
You know, I was shocked, to be honest. I mean, I'm confident in myself. I'm a competitor. I know I can kick a football. I know I can be successful at any level. I've shown that. But at that time, I was still kind of finding my niche. And then all of a sudden, my first year, I go 16-for-20. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't even get first team all-conference because Luke Monzay was his name, played with Georgia Tech. He was very good, a little skinny guy, but he was very accurate and very consistent. I don't know whose percentage was better, but, you know, I kind of thought since I was a newcomer to it that I may win the award. And I didn't. I got honorable mention, which was kind of weird. But Then at the same time, I was a semifinalist for Lou Groza, obviously, like you already said, is the nation's top place kicker, the nation. And I was just kind of like, I mean, because there's a thing where you're nominated, and then there's a thing where there's another level, and then you're a semifinalist, and I made it through all that, and I was not a finalist. But then you start to realize that you're on the map. After that year, I had played 2 years of football, almost two full seasons of football, and that's it in my life. So it's one of those things where when my dad told me after my junior year in high school, he said, if you don't try it now, son, you'll never try this. And I said, I don't want to get hit, Dad, but you know what? You're right. So I tried it, and thank God I did. But then again, you know, football does not define me. But, you know, to go along with what you're talking about, it was overwhelming. It was very cool. I didn't expect it by any means. I was, but you know, all I can do is what I can do. And you know, most importantly, a lot of people forget to do this, especially kickers. I think the guys, not only the snapper and the holder that did a great job, but the guys protecting for me, because without the other 10 guys, I'm not even capable of doing my job. So, you know, so that I was 80%, 16 for 20, and I could have made the other four, to be honest. And I just didn't. So that's the way it goes. But, you know, it wasn't overwhelming. It was kind of like I shocked myself, and I didn't kind of sink in until I realized I was a semifinalist for the nation's best kicker. But it kind of carried over the next season. I started my fifth year, which was my senior year, a retro senior year, hurt, which kind of stunk, but that was life, and that was life as an athlete. And I did okay, but I've had better. I was a captain, and it was kind of cool how everything came full circle, because I went from kind of scared to play the game to a captain of the North Carolina Tar Heels. And I know it's considered a basketball school, but in general, it is, you know, the football program is pretty elite as well.
Absolutely. You were involved in different aspects of that school. Not only were you involved in football, not only were you involved in soccer, you were part of the school newspaper, National Honor Society, and the Spanish National Honor Society. Spanish doesn't fit. Do you know how to speak Spanish fluently?
You know, it's funny. It's funny you say that, because I still, if there's one thing when people say, cause I made mistakes along the way, financially, or you know, just made a bad decision here and there. Everybody's done that.
Right.
But the one thing, if there's one thing people say I regret, it was right before I had the chance to play in college. Paul Torbus was the head coach, and I was really good in Spanish. Like, I was in AP Spanish all the way through high school. I wasn't fluent, but I really understood it, and I can write it. And so the speaking part was what I had to really think about and I struggled with. But my school was going to send me to Barcelona to study abroad in college. And not only was I excited about the studying part, but I was like, dude, I'm going to Barcelona, Spain. There's beaches, there's girls, there's everything. You know, yeah, So I was like, why wouldn't I? And I ran that by my head coach when I had a meeting with him. When they call us student athletes,
right,
for a reason.
Right.
Because you're a student first and then an athlete. Well, he said, which shocked me, and I love the guy to this day, and if he was around, I'd give him a big hug. He gave me an opportunity. But he said, if you ever want to play for me, you might want to stay around here. And you know, I was only going to be gone for 3 months, and it was the summer. So it wasn't like I was in school, but I had to be there for workouts. So it kind of struck me wrong, but that's one thing. Just think, if you're a journalism major, you're a good writer. Mm-hmm. I'm on the radio now, as you're doing, and you can speak fluent Spanish as a Kansas City, Missouri guy. That would be great. I still understand a little bit of it, but I've lost it, and it bothers me that I didn't go study abroad. But then again, I got an opportunity, and I made the most of it on the football field. So it's kind of hard to decipher what would have happened if I went over.
You know what? A lot can be said for the decisions that we make as we get older, because we learn from the things that we did when we were younger. So
right.
when you're not able to make that next jump, there's a reason. There's simply and methodically a reason why you're doing what you're doing now. To go a little bit back to talking about being in high school, you're ninth in your class out of 365. You're added to the East Mecklenburg Wall of Fame in 2005. Did that come to a shocker at you, or you just said, oh, well, okay, that's cool, and, you know, go from there, or did you attend the ceremony?
I was there. They didn't put me on the wall and say that, you know, I was honored, and they talked to me and run it by me. I spoke to all the seniors and all the people that were honor society, no matter what grade they're in. Right. And, you know, giving back to my own high school is huge. Since I have kind of fallen out of touch with them, because they don't, I asked to come back, and they say they can't, they're so honored, and they're going to bring me back, and then they never follow up. So I've been to three or four rival high schools and spoken to football teams, soccer teams, schools, and it's pretty sad because I love my high school, even though it's not a football powerhouse at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the Wall of Fame is pretty cool. I mean, we had somebody from The Apprentice that was on there. We had, that was from East Mecklenburg. We had a couple news ladies, a mayor, a couple basketball players. I mean, so, you know, there were some athletes and some celebrities that went through East Mecklenburg, which is kind of crazy, but I'm pretty sure I was the only football player that made it to that level and especially won Super Bowl. So that's a great feeling. But, you know, the biggest thing I like to express is football is great. The money was great. But if you can't give back and you can't affect a life in a positive way, then you're not doing your job as a celebrity. And that's one thing I take pride in.
Right. You know, there are a lot of current players and former players who are constantly giving back to the community. I've been on interviews with Will Allen, number 20 of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You probably never played with him, but he gives back. Okay. He gives back to his own community.
Right.
And he does that in such a way called the Will Allen Foundation. You have quite a few players as well as, good grief, there's so many out there right now. And I think they all get a bad rap. I really don't think that they get the type of recognition for the things that they do outside of being on the front and center stage. Tyrone Carter, if you'd probably play with him, I believe he has TEC out of Minnesota, and he gives back by helping, you know, college athletes maximize their potential. He's been doing it a long time, very successful doing it. I had a chance to interview him, one of my first interviews ever, other than Damon Cromartie. Just a really nice guy, and Tyrone Carter, very giving, very nice to talk to, but has given back consistently. And so I really believe that when you can give back, and to go to your point in regards to not doing what you're designed to do by just leaving everything to chance. Jerome Bettis has a Jerome Bettis Foundation. I had a chance to interview him. Great guy, is doing great things with kids that have asthma, constantly active, giving back to the community. And for him, that's part of who he is. I think it has to be a part of who you are, to be honest with you, Jeff. It has to be part of your inner being, your fiber, in order to give back to those people.
I agree 100%. And you know, there's two ways to look at it. The way you're explaining it is, this is what happens with people like Will Allen, even myself, even though I had crazy hair and I was always seen in public and I shook hands, I took pictures, I had some drinks with people. I didn't really want to stop my life, and I realized it was, you know, a lot of it was fun, but it was actually hurting me as a person because the Roonies were brought to, you know, too many people focus on the negatives, and, you know, I just figured I was having fun like everybody else, but apparently I couldn't. I had to be careful. So, you know, what happens is when there's a negative something about you out there, they harp on that for years. When they don't know that I went to 3 charity events a week. I did more charity events than anybody on my team, but I wasn't as famous as Hines Ward and Ben Roethlisberger and everybody else. And nothing against those guys because I'm not saying they're bad people at all. I'm just saying they had their mark, they're flashy guys, they're the highest paid guys, so they got the credit. You know, people like Will Allen, myself, even practice squad guys, and they're making good money, but they're not killing it. I mean, they go to all the charity events, man, because they're kind of, even if they don't want to, they're kind of forced to, you know, and nobody mentions them, you know, because they always want to pick out the stars, or if one of the stars, I mean, they'll be at a charity event talking about Jeffrey hit a paper towel dispenser, and it's just like, dude, I'm here for the kids, man. I mean, yeah, that was stupid, but is it really national news? I don't think so. And, you know, so those are the things you kind of have to, you look past, but that's why the more people I get to meet, a Steeler Nation, because it's everywhere. I just found out, a stat the other day, that besides Pittsburgh area, the number one city in the country with the most Steeler fans and bars is Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that. and I live, but I mean, I do see it all the time, but until the Panthers played at home against the Steelers and I saw that, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew the fans traveled well, of course, but it was crazy. It was all black and yellow. But, you know, it's just the media, as we're part of the media as well, but they like to focus too much on the negativity instead of bringing out the good of somebody. And other guys that are, you know, and I won't call anybody out, that's not my role, but there's guys that are very prominent, big names, multi-millionaires. They don't do anything for the community, and they don't sign autographs, and they're rude to people, and they get all good press. So, you know, it just kind of depends, you know, who you know and who's going to toot your horn and who's going to hate them.
Right, right. You know, there's another guy, speaking of teammates, Fast Willie Parker also went to UNC, ended up being a future teammate of yours with the Steelers. Everybody knows who Fast Willie is, and of course, speaking of the guys who get, you know, who get all the publicity, and I mean, Willie Parker, probably one of the fastest guys as a part of that, those years, Steeler running backs, as a compliment to the great Jerome Bettis, definitely found his way into the hearts and minds of people, and everybody wants to compare the current running backs to Willie Parker, like the current status of Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is fantastic. He didn't have a fumble last year at all. At all. He didn't fumble once. Right. The guy's a beast. So when you're talking about comparisons of who gets the good press, who gets the bad press, Willie Parker wasn't the most durable guy, but when you gave him the ball, you knew he was going to do something with it. You knew that his yak or yards after catch or yards from scrimmage are going to account for a lot, not only for who he is, but he gave back to his community also, in addition to that.
Right.
So it's not always about the good press. It's not always about the bad press. It's the press you make for yourself. To go a little bit further down the road, in 2002, you had a tryout with the New Orleans Saints. You joined the Steelers as a free agent during the regular season, which is not really typical for the Steelers to do, to be honest with you. You were signed as a midseason replacement to Todd Peterson. You immediately made that impact. Immediately. Like the first kick that you made, 2005 against New York. I know you know the game very well. Divisional playoff game. It was an overtime kick. Your counterpart to New York, his name's Doug Bryan, he missed two field goals. Tell me about that 33-yarder you made in overtime.
I'll kind of go on a tangent here for 1 second. That was the game. July 22nd here in Charlotte, North Carolina, Jerome is speaking. Jerome Bettis is speaking at the, it's called the Touchdown Club at the luncheon, and he is obviously one of my great friends, and I have the pleasure of introducing him. So, and this is one of the stories I'm going to tell. The game itself, that was the year we were 15-1 or something crazy. Mm-hmm. We couldn't lose if we tried. And we get in the playoffs, we get a bye, and the Jets had there's no business. We should not have won that game. Mm-hmm. And we didn't play good enough, and the Jets outplayed it, and they did miss a couple field goals, and it was freezing cold. It was like -15. And I remember getting down there, and he had missed two, and we had all the momentum, and I was just like, just give me a chance. And they not only gave me a chance, but they gave me a 33-yard field goal, which is never easy, it's still a pressure kick, even though the game's tied, and it was an overtime. But the guys got me in position to, you know, get to a spot where I was pretty much money. And I made it, and in the locker room, Jerome was crying and gave me like the biggest hug. I couldn't even breathe. And it was, to myself, I thought, you know, that was a huge kick and I'm glad I pulled my team through. But Jerome Bettis gave me like the biggest hug I've ever had in my life. And this guy is a Hall of Famer one day. Of course he is now, but that's what I thought. And because this was just our year. It was like, you know, we were 5-6 and we never lost again. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we were just determined to get Jerome to his hometown of Detroit. And, you know, come away with the ring. And I don't know what hit us, when it hit us, but, it worked. And that was, obviously that wasn't the year, but it was the year after that. Mm-hmm. But that was, that year we ran out of gas, man. We were great all year. Teams kind of like were intimidated by us, so they didn't play their A games. Mm-hmm. And then New England came in there and Tom Brady ripped us apart, but.
Yeah.
The year after, though, that we were reflecting from that season and that huge season we had, and then we were 5-6, and then went, you know, to the Super Bowl and won it, of course. But I remember that like it was yesterday. It's unfortunate it was 11 years ago, but it just seems like it was. And another cool thing is we have the 10-year anniversary of the Super Bowl 40 team. Mm-hmm. We get honored at halftime of one of the games this year. I was told that.
Nice. Nice. Very cool. You know, talking about, and I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to ask this anyway. Tom Brady in the news, like in the biggest and worst of ways possible. As a kicker, when the ball is deflated, now I've kicked an overinflated ball, I've kicked an underinflated ball. I am no professional by any stretch of the imagination. What is it about a deflated ball that would make a difference in 33, 42, 46-yard field goals with wind at a plus 7 headed from the northwest, and you're facing that side?
Well, it depends on how cold it is. If it's a warm day and the ball is a little deflated, it's really not so bad, to be honest with you, unless it's flat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my honest opinion about the whole deflate gate thing is, Tom Brady, even though he did mess with the rules of the game, integrity of the game, he shouldn't be suspended. Now, I don't like Tom Brady. I don't like the Patriots, but that's just because they beat us too often. But I will say that everyone's entitled to their own opinions, so whatever on that. But as far as kicking, when it's cold, it feels like a glass bottle anyway. So if it was flat, it would absolutely go nowhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact.
Right. Well, the fact that he was able to throw it in that type of environment, Arizona, obviously, as you know, does not get cold. So clearly a breeding ground for footballs that could have potentially, and still at this point, unsure as to whether or not any previous games or that Super Bowl game was played with deflated balls. It's really kind of up in the air right now. New England Patriots are fighting back against the NFL. Robert Kraft, before the Wells report came out, stated essentially that this is a very harsh rule and that they should not be penalized, et cetera, and so forth. Of course, when you penalize Tom Brady, you penalize the team. But the fact that Tom Brady had not owned up to it, yet the report stated that there are certain indications that conflict his claim that there was nothing done to the Wells team investigators. So, you know, a lot to be said for that. Moving on, Super Bowl 40, and I have to talk about this because this particular Super Bowl, I know where I was at, I know what I was doing, and I know what you were doing. As a matter of fact, you had kicked all three field goals, you converted 14 of your potential PATs, you had a streak of 189 successful PATs, including the postseason, dating back to the Chargers in 2003, but the streak was snapped against the Redskins. How big was it, team reflecting, in your mind, how big was it to get Jerome Bettis back to Detroit to win that ring?
It was awesome. Like I said, we were 5-6 that year, and we were okay, but we couldn't win the close ones. And then all of a sudden, I don't know who said what or what happened to us, but we definitely just started. We started playing together, and we knew that going into the game that we were definitely going to win. It didn't matter how we would do it. We were going to find a way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. It was just once we started rolling, we got every bounce. We couldn't lose. I mean, that was just it was great, man. It was a great feeling, and even better, it was a great thing for Jerome to go back home. He ran out of the tunnel by himself. It was just awesome.
Well, the fact that he's going into the Hall of Fame, and I had interviewed Jerome Bettis early on during this year, and it was right after he had been inducted, I was so the elated feeling that I received just talking to him. Very humble, very nice guy, very, very well-versed. But it's like one of those guys where you just sit around, have dinner with, shoot the breeze, talk like if it was nothing at all. And I can think of a dozen interviews that I've done with the likes of LeVon Kirkland, Max Starks, which you also know very well. And so it's just always a breath of fresh air to talk to these guys in such a way to where Steeler Nation knows who they are outside of football. And that's the whole design as to what I do and why I do it. Going forward, November 16, 2010, of course, against a team that you already clearly stated you are not a fan of, and that's the New England Patriots, as a 26-yarder. And then you were replaced by the eventual Sean Sweezum, who now kicks for the Steelers. You became a free agent, and lo and behold, an AFC North team out of the clear blue sky on the 18th November 2010, the Bengals offered you a contract. Now, you kicked through them for 8 seasons in the AFC North. What was it about their offer that made you decline it?
But to be honest, man, I didn't see I didn't see myself getting released by the Steelers. I know I wasn't kicking fantastic by any means, but I didn't see myself getting released. So when I did, I didn't have my head right. I mean, they called within 30 minutes of me getting released to have me go to Cincinnati, and it wasn't because I didn't want to kick for them. Yeah, I was a rival for so long, but you kind of have to look past that if you want to have a job. But then I kind of let my head clear for 2 weeks because I had about 3 or 4 opportunities. And, I don't know why I didn't go there. It was just kind of like I didn't want to let another, organization down because my head wasn't right. That's pretty much the only reason I didn't go there, because I would have loved to play the Steelers because they were playing them 2 games later.
Mm-hmm. Man, a lot of great memories. Not so much outside of the Steeler organization. I mean, you had been in trouble like any other player. I interviewed a ton of players last year and the year before that, at least 60, and a lot of them were troubled. They understood where they went wrong, like Shane Ray, busted with marijuana in his system. Then you had Randy Gregory got busted at the NFL Combine for having marijuana in his system. A lot of these players learn later on, you had learned later on in your NFL career, that essentially whatever was being done, whatever you were doing, was not the way to go. You immediately corrected it. You made amends to it. You paid the price. You paid the piper. You had all the negative press, which in my opinion was well overstated. And I think there's a little bit more made out of it than it actually should have been. That's just my opinion. We all have our own. So moving forward, you were signed by the 49ers. Joe Nedney was out. Apparently, he had a pulled groin, I believe. You can correct me if you want. And you had your first game. You went 3-for-3, 44-yard field goal, and you finished your 5 games with the Niners, having made all 13 extra points, 9 out of 10. What was the reason for the Niners releasing you? Because Joe Nedney came back, or did they give you an explicit reason?
Well, I was never released. I went 9-for-10. I kicked great. They changed coaches. I knew when they got a coach, they'd be really successful. Mm. And when they changed coaches, they brought their own guys in. That's what guys do. They had Brad Seeley. He was at Cleveland with Phil Dawson. Or no, it was David Akers, because Harbaugh brought in. Mm-hmm. Akers used to kick with Philadelphia, and John Harbaugh, who was at Baltimore, referred him to San Fran. So I never got released. It was just I didn't get re-signed.
Okay, fair enough. And though, when you went to Seattle, August 3rd, was that seemed relatively fast. It was just over 30 days. How did you receive that position from Seattle? Was it like a phone call, or did your agent call you, or how did that happen?
Yeah, it was my agent, and it was after the lockout, and they just told me they'd pay me the 10-year minimum, and I was, I was fine with just getting on the team, and then I made that team. Pete Carroll actually told me to my face that, with your leadership and your 2 Super Bowl rings, I'm going to appoint you one of my special teams captains. So I was all excited. I knew that team had potential too once they had got a quarterback, and of course they have Russell Wilson, and that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the last day, they with an hour left for final cuts, they released me and brought in Steven Hauschka for less money. And, I mean, that was the end of my NFL career, even though I still hadn't retired because I'm greedy.
Wow. You know what? It something to be said for those people that really just want to essentially be on a team to not only assist in any way that they can, but to be on a team to help build the camaraderie, to help build the morale. And I think that you helped that Seattle Seahawks team actually do that. Exiting football, you currently have a charity in place. Tell me about this Kick for Kids charity. How did you have a desire to start that?
Well, they came to me and then they said, for every kick you make, are you willing to be the spokesperson for the Kids for Kids charity. And I said, of course. I mean, you know, I matched in a couple of years, whatever they've made, how many kicks I made, they donate $500. So I matched in a couple of years. And then, you know, but I never actually had my own charity event because I was so focused on everybody else's and mm-hmm. wanted to be a part of everybody's. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the right team together, so to say, mm-hmm. to make sure because if I do something, I like to be really organized. And I didn't put enough preparation into it to have my own charity at the time. Now, mm-hmm. I would love to have my own nonprofit because I have some guys I can trust.
Absolutely.
But it's hard to turn down charity, whether you have money or you don't, or you have fame or you don't, because as many things as I find to complain about, I'm very blessed and very fortunate to have what I do have and live the life I do live.
No doubt about that one, Jeff. You have done quite a few interesting things. You're not afraid to go out on a limb and do very eccentric things. As a matter of fact, you bleached your hair, not only in the NFL, but you bleached your hair to match your girlfriend's outfit for a fashion show, and I can only imagine what that color was. Was it pink by chance?
No, I don't know what it was. Who knows? But it looked somewhat normal.
Somewhat normal. Okay.
Yeah, somewhat.
Right, right. It was a pink backpack that you carried around.
Training camp.
Yeah, training camp. Yeah, it was for special teams. And so would you be the only one carrying around that backpack, or did you hand that thing out for other people to wear?
Well, no. Usually when we had a rookie, we'd make him do something. But a couple of years, the youngest guy wasn't a rookie anymore, so I just did it. And, you know, that's basically just me anyway. One year I had Thor the Explorer. One year I had some pink backpack that was like about recycling, and then another year I had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. So I don't know, man. You know, when you're in training camp, it's fun to be around the fellas and get better on a daily basis. But you know, it is a grind out there, like mainly for other positions. But
right.
Of course, we're sore and we're tired, just like them. Only we're not hitting. So
right.
You know, it gets you have to do some things to make yourself smile and laugh.
Right. Absolutely right. I was at Steelers training camp last year, and I seen some scuffles. You know, defense and offense were kind of going at it. Obviously, it's a little hot out there with that Pittsburgh weather,
yeah.
And it's not that these guys were hitting very hard. They were just trying to understand and study the formation with Mike Munchak out there, the Lions coach. I mean, this guy turned around an offensive line that had led Ben Roethlisberger to the turf for a better part of 2 years, and so last year he wasn't sacked as much. So definitely a lot of great techniques going on at Steelers training camp, which I'm looking forward to getting back to this year. And hopefully anybody out there for sponsors, I'd be certainly happy to listen as I try to get back to Steelers training camp this year. Moving forward, Pittsburgh Penguins, huge, obviously a pretty decent sized letdown this year. They had played at the Mellon Arena after winning Super Bowl 43, which in fact you had one of the strongest kicks against the Cardinals in Arizona. You dropped the first puck against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which obviously now Tampa Bay is on an Eastern Conference final game against the New York Rangers. But that game was February 4, 2009 that you were at. You wore a throwback Mario Lemieux. Where did you get that throwback at, Jeff?
That was actually a Christmas present from my family. You know, I don't know, but I had seen the tickets to the Penguins, so when we won that second ring, you know, and they knew I was at all the games, and I sat amongst the people. I was about 15, 20 rows up. I don't need to get in a box and hide from people. Mm. If you want a picture, autograph, then so be it. Hopefully they do it at intermission so we can watch the game. But, you know, it was fun, man. I love hockey. I've never even skated before, but I just have a huge respect for the game for some reason. I think it's an amazing sport. They're so skilled, but it's all on ice. I think it's great. And of course, I love the fights, but, you know, that throwback jersey was a Christmas gift, and that was a perfect opportunity to wear it. I'm glad I wore it that game.
Absolutely right, no doubt about that one. So what are you doing now, Jeff, outside of outside of football. You said that you were on the radio. Are you on WZGV in Charlotte?
I was on FNZ in Charlotte, WFNZ, 610 Sports Talk. Yeah, you know, I'm not on there right now currently. You know, it's, to me, talking sports is cool, but I like to throw in some, you know, humor and fun things. And but, you know, working there, you're working with all brainiacs.
Right.
And, you know, it's tough to, I don't know, I'm not going to say it's boring because that's an awful station, but, you know, if you can't have fun on the radio and, you know, have a little fun with things, then, you know, it becomes repetitive and it's not really my gig and my calling. I loved it. I had fun with the guys, but I just kind of wanted to be myself more, and I couldn't because there was all the questions were, you know, fact-related and stat-related. Mm-hmm. You know, what do the offensive line do here? And, I mean, I don't study that stuff. I mean, it's not, I guess it's my fault, but it's just not up my alley. Anyway, what I'm doing now is I have my own radio show called Barely Controlled Radio on Voice America Internet Radio, which is a step below XM. And I started out as a podcast, and I got a little promotional thing. And I'll, of course, the only money I make is off sponsors. Mm-hmm. I'm only 5-6 weeks in, so I'm I don't have a sponsor yet. So, you know, if anybody's willing, wants to do that, you know, I have a good listenership. You know, on the station I'm on, there's 8 channels. On the channel I'm on, it's called the Variety Channel, because I can talk about anything. I have, there are 450,000 listeners a month on that channel. Now, on my shows, it's probably near 75,000-80,000. But either way, I was going from 5,000 to that. And, you know, so I think there's big things in radio for me. And I actually enjoy it, too, so that's cool. But I'm doing that. I do motivational speaking. I still try to stay within the kids and this and that. Mm-hmm. I go to, I privately coach kickers. I have about 7 kickers I work with. I work camps. I have a camp actually in 2 days, my first ever camp. I'm running.
Awesome.
You know, so I'm staying busy, but it'd be nice to have a consistent job, consistent income, and not have to bounce around and 4 different little jobs.
Right, right. No, I totally understand you there. I had started the RudeDogShow.com because I wanted to give back to Steeler Nation, as I had stated earlier, that essentially give them the types of understandings of who these players are, such as yourself. And so I believe that they had not been able, and still to this day, I don't know that there's anybody out there doing what I do, and that gives me a niche. That gives me a complete dynamic that otherwise had not been tapped into by anybody, by any entity or anything of that nature. And I believe that I'm kind of tied with the Pittsburgh Steelers directly in regards to interviews with players, to be honest with you. So with that being said, I wish you the best. If there's any time that I can be on the show to maybe try to gauge some sponsors or just to be on to shoot the breeze, I'd be more than happy to do that with you, Jeff.
That'd be awesome, man. I appreciate you having me, too. It was a great interview. If you ever need me for anything else, you have my cell phone number, man.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you so much, Jeff. I do appreciate that. And with that being said, Steeler Nation, this has been Jeff Reed, former kicker and punter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And feel free to reach out to Jeff. Where can everybody find you?
On Twitter, at The Real Jeff Reed. You can like my Facebook page, Barely Controlled Radio. I mean, that's, you can go to thejeffreedshow.com, thejeffreedshow.com, or barelycontrolledradio.com. It's the same website. It's got some charity stuff I do on there. It's got all my episodes for my podcast, Voice America Radio, upcoming appearances, this and that. I have all that stuff on there.
Excellent.
You know, and basically it has my email on there. So you can find it. I'm in control of all my social media. So a lot of people that have all those followers, but they pay someone to respond. It's actually me.
Imagine that.
I like to see what people say, even if it's rude, so it's fun.
Exactly. Well, again, thank you so much, and feel free to reach out to Jeff if you have any questions or want to be on his show as well. And with that being said, this is Rudy Rude Dog Reyes on the RudeDogShow.com.